Today is Thursday, May 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. and the EU set up, quote, atrocity crimes advisory group, unquote, to probe alleged war crimes in Ukraine.
U.S. officials say the new entity is aimed at directly supporting the Ukraine prosecutor's office in gathering evidence of war crimes and other atrocities committed there since the Russian invasion.
Texas officials say the gunman who killed 19 children warned of the attack on social media as grief overwhelms the community.
Grief counselors are meeting students from this elementary school with parents, staff, with educators from this school and from other schools who are equally traumatized.
And Ukraine pushes for quick European Union sanctions on Russia. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The United States, European Union, and Britain have jointly announced the creation of what they call the Atrocity Crimes Advisory Group. VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman in Washington explains it is the latest international effort to help document crimes allegedly committed by Russian forces in Ukraine.
U.S. officials say the new entity is aimed at directly supporting the Ukraine prosecutor's office in gathering evidence of war crimes and other atrocities committed there since the Russian invasion. State Department spokesman Ned Price says this is part of the commitment by the United States to ensure those responsible for such crimes are held accountable.
It helps our Ukrainian partners actually collect that evidence, actually on the ground with mobile justice teams composed of international and Ukrainian experts.
The European, American, and other team members will primarily be based in Poland, but are expected to make short-term trips into Ukraine. Russia denies committing war crimes in Ukraine. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Tension is rising in the Korean Peninsula as North Korea tests fired three ballistic missiles Wednesday, including what appeared to be an intercontinental ballistic missile. The launches come hours after U.S. President Joe Biden wrapped up a visit to Northeast Asia. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul, South Korea.
U.S. officials had repeatedly warned North Korea could conduct a weapons test to coincide with President Joe Biden's Asia trip. The flurry of North Korean launches came just 12 hours after Biden left Japan. South Korea's military says North Korea tested three missiles, an ICBM, a second missile that failed shortly after liftoff, and a third short-range ballistic missile. In response, South Korea's military conducted an exercise involving 30 F-15K fighter jets. The United States and South Korea also launched two of their own missiles. South Korean military spokesman Kim Jong-rak said the show of force demonstrates South Korea's overwhelming power and readiness to conduct a surgical strike in North Korea. North Korea has conducted 17 rounds of launches this year. There are also signs the North could soon conduct its first nuclear test since 2017. On Wednesday, Japanese Chief Cabinet Secretary Hirokazu Matsuno said further North Korean provocations, including a nuke test, are possible, though he won't attempt to guess the timing. North Korea was a major topic of Biden's Asia trip. In Seoul, he met South Korea's new president, who wants to intensify military exercises meant to deter North Korea. Japanese officials also support a tougher stance toward the North. But North Korea has two important defenders, China and Russia, who have instead criticized the United States for refusing to make concessions to the North. Seoul-based scholar Park Won-gan says China agrees the United States is not taking North Korea's security concerns into consideration. So, he says, North Korea will unreservedly launch high-intensity provocations with the backing of China. North Korea walked away from nuclear talks with the United States in 2019, accusing Washington of a hostile policy. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs Mark Lambert condemned the latest missile launches and said Pyongyang has violated multiple U.N. Security Council resolutions and continues to advance the capabilities of its unlawful weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missiles program. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi begins a two-week tour of the Pacific Wednesday, designed to signal Beijing's broader ambitions in the region and strengthen commercial and security ties. Experts said the trip raises concern for administrations in the U.S. and Australia, weary of increased adversarial Chinese influence in the region. For VOA, Phil Mercer has this report from Sydney.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi will travel to 8 countries in 10 days, including Samoa, Tonga and Papua New Guinea. He'll also host a meeting of Pacific Island foreign ministers while in Fiji. Beijing recently signed a controversial security pact with Solomon Islands, where Wang is due to arrive on Wednesday. The tour will last until June 4. Australia will be watching closely, since the Pacific has traditionally been its sphere of influence. New Zealand, France and the United States also have strong historical links to the countries set for Chinese visits. Australia's new Labour government has criticised the former Conservative administration in Canberra for ignoring the Pacific. Foreign Minister Penny Wong is promising more engagement with neighbouring countries.
We want to help build a stronger Pacific family. That is why we will do more. But we will also do it better. We will listen because we care what the Pacific has to say. The Australian government knows that nothing is more central to the security and well-being of the Pacific than climate change. We've heard the Pacific and we will act, standing shoulder to shoulder with you as we address the climate crisis.
Chinese state media outlets have said Wong's trip was evidence of China's growing influence throughout the Pacific. Australia's relations with China have deteriorated in recent years over various geopolitical disputes. There were also claims of Chinese interference in Australia's domestic affairs and cyber espionage. Beijing denied the allegations, describing them as anti-China hysteria. However, in a message congratulating Anthony Albanese on his election win in Australia, China said it was ready to work with the new administration in Canberra to face the future, a sign perhaps that bilateral ties could be reset. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
China wants 10 small Pacific nations to endorse a sweeping agreement covering everything from security to fisheries in what one leader wants is a game-changing bid by China to wrest control of the region. A draft of the agreement obtained by the Associated Press shows China wants to train Pacific police officers team up on, quote, traditional and non-traditional security, unquote, and expand law enforcement cooperation. For more, I spoke with Robert Sutter, Professor of Practice of International Affairs at the George Washington University Elliott School of International Affairs.
This type of an arrangement is something that would be a logical follow-on to what we've seen them do in the Solomon Islands, for example. And so, and they've had influence in Tonga to a considerable degree, and in the past, and perhaps that's coming into play here. Is Tonga one of these countries that you mentioned, the 10 countries? I assume it is. This is a very difficult thing to counter, and now this would have to be made, given a higher priority by the United States. Solomon Islands served as a wake-up call for this sort of thing, and that was just, what, 2 months ago, the crisis over that. So I think we will see a lot more action on the part of the governments that I just mentioned in trying to compete with China about these issues and persuade these countries not to move in this direction.
Is China merely trying to counter the United States in this region, or it's just a self-preservation in terms of policy?
If you consider the Pacific Islands China's flank, then where does their flank end? My goodness, the Pacific Islands, how far are they away from China? The Chinese have an acute sense of being contained. They're very worried about this. They constantly worry about being contained by the United States. And the Chinese at the same time are in a position where they feel they're powerful now. This presence of the United States, which has been in this area of the world for, what, 60 years, 70 years, since the defeat of Japan. The United States has been the leading power in this part of the world. That China has never liked. And now they're taking actions against it, thinking that the United States is now weaker and that this can be carried out. And they're stronger and they can carry it out. So that dynamic is underway. I think we're right in the middle of this right now. And this is why the U.S. is trying to prevent this sort of thing or to counter it in various ways, because this expansion of China comes at the expense of other countries. it comes, these other countries are going to be dominated by China in one way or another.
China would continue to try to dominate, but Washington is certainly not stepping back. So where is this headed? What do you think would happen? What is the end game, if any?
We're in the beginning part of a very long, protracted struggle between China on the one hand. It has client states. There's really, China doesn't have any allies to speak of. And the United States, which is relying on and working with its allies and partners in this part of the world that you're talking about, the main one is Australia and New Zealand, and France in addition. And they have influence in the South Pacific. And so these countries are working with the United States to counter the influence of China, because China is out to undermine the United States wherever it can.
That's Robert Sutter, Professor of Practice of International Affairs at the George Washington University Elliott School of International Affairs, speaking with me from Washington, D.C. The governor of Texas says the gunman who killed 19 children and two teachers at an elementary school had warned on social media minutes before the attack that he was going to shoot up a school. Governor Greg Abbott says the shooter, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, used an AR-15 in the attack Tuesday. About 30 minutes before the shooting, Ramos made three social media posts. According to the governor, Ramos posted that he was going to shoot his grandmother then, and he had shot the woman, and finally he was going to shoot up an elementary school. VOA Scott Stearns joins us from Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, on how the community is dealing with the grief a day after the shooting.
So Uvalde is a small town, you know, green, rolling hills, a place where you might imagine raising a family away from population centers that you might think would be more dangerous for your children. And I think that is certainly added to the shock here in this community. This was meant to be the last week of classes. So today and tomorrow, were, you know what it's like. It's the end of school. Summer's about to start. You're cleaning out your desk. You're saying goodbye to your friends. You're saying goodbye to your teachers. What a great time for your school summer break to be about to begin. That's what should be happening here at Robb Elementary School. Instead, grief counselors are meeting with students from this elementary school, with parents, staff, with educators from this school and from other schools who are equally traumatized by this event. And what should have been a loud and happy day at this elementary school is blocked off streets and Texas State Trooper cars with lights and grief counseling.
What about any update as it concerns those who were injured and the investigations into this horrific shooting?
So one of the questions facing law enforcement today is, where did this 18-year-old gunman get the weapon that he used to shoot his grandmother and then drive here to the elementary school and shoot quite a number of students? Sadly, that death toll rose overnight to 19 students and two adults. We have not yet any change to the status of those students who were injured and who are still in hospital, both here and in San Antonio. As for the motives of the gunman, well, given that the gunman is dead, we may not know really ever what would bring this 18-year-old who's from the town. He grew up here. He went to the local high school. He's certainly known in the community.
That's VOA Scott Stern speaking with me from Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. In other news, Ukraine's Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said on Wednesday his country was upset to see that European Union sanctions against Russia are, in his words, hanging in the air, unquote. Kuleba was referring to the EU's sixth package of sanctions against Moscow, which includes an oil embargo. European Commission this month proposed new sanctions, but they required the unanimous support of all 27 EU member states, and Hungary has blocked them. Hungary, which is heavily dependent on Russian oil, has said it will need about 750 million euros in short-term investments to upgrade refineries and expand a pipeline bringing oil from Croatia. It also said the longer-term conversion of its economy from the Russian oil could cost as much as 15 to 18 billion euros. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. The world's billionaires have increased their wealth by trillions of dollars since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, while the poorest countries are struggling with soaring commodity prices and rising debts. These are the findings of a newly released analysis by the charity Oxfam, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
As the global business elite gather in the Swiss mountain resort of Davos for the World Economic Forum, Oxfam says they have reason to celebrate. An analysis by the charity shows the wealth of the world's 2,668 billionaires has risen by $3.78 trillion since 2020. Max Lawson is head of inequality policy at Oxfam.
Firstly, and primarily because of the trillions of dollars that rich countries poured into the economy in response to COVID-19. So that was the first thing, and that drove up asset prices. And now we're seeing this really sharp increase in addition in the fortunes of food and energy billionaires. As you see, the profits in those sectors soar because of prices rising.
According to Oxfam, 573 new billionaires have been created since 2020. And the world's 10 richest men now own more wealth than the poorest 40% of humanity, or 3.1 billion people. As the rich have got richer, the past 2 years have seen the poor getting poorer, with decades of progress against poverty now at risk. Again, Max Lawson.
A crisis of inequality, a crisis of climate-induced hunger all over the world. And then on top of that, the food price increases and the problems of COVID-19. You put that all together, you have more than a perfect storm, and it's going to hurt a lot of people, and it's going to kill a lot of people.
The World Food Programme warns 49 million people are at immediate risk of famine in 43 countries. David Beasley is the World Food Programme's executive director.
Our needs right now are extra $6 to $8 billion that we need. We're only asking for 1 to 2 days worth of their net worth increase. Is that too much to ask to stabilize the world against famine, destabilization and mass migrations?
The World Food Programme says Ukraine supplies enough grain to feed 400 million people, but its ports are blockaded by Russia. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers from the University of Florida say that for the first time in human history, they have grown plants in soil from the moon, called lunar regolith. In a university press release, the scientists see their work as a breakthrough in the exploration of the moon and space. They say their efforts provide a crucial first step that will eventually allow future moon missions to grow their own plants for food and oxygen. In a study published by Communications Biology, researchers demonstrate that plants can spring to life and grow in the lunar regolith. The study also explains how the plants biologically react to the lunar soil. For their experiments, the scientists used only 12 grams of moon soil that was collected by the Apollo 11, 12, and 17 moon missions. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Joe Biden used the war in Ukraine to send a message to China. Biden ended his six-day trip to Asia that included a Tokyo summit with the leaders of Japan, India, and Australia. For more on this topic and others, join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday at 2105 UTC, join me, Steve Miller, as I put the latest developments into a global context with interviews and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
To all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and television programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Gina Dorfer in Washington. Have a great day.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns the arrests by Hong Kong authorities of 90-year-old Cardinal Joseph Zen, the former Catholic Bishop of Hong Kong and outspoken critic of the Chinese Communist Party, and three other prominent pro-democracy advocates, Margaret Ng, a lawyer and former legislator, Hoi Po Kung, a scholar and former professor, and Denise Ho, an actress and singer. The four were trustees of the now-dissolved 612 Humanitarian Relief Fund, which was established in 2019 to provide financial and legal assistance to those who participated in pro-democracy demonstrations in Hong Kong. They were falsely charged and arrested on May 11th for colluding with foreign forces and subsequently released on bail, but could face sentences of life imprisonment. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said, in arresting these veteran activists, scholars, and religious leaders under the so-called national security law, Hong Kong authorities have again demonstrated that they will pursue all means necessary to stifle dissent and undercut protected rights and freedoms. Then White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre called on PRC and Hong Kong authorities to cease targeting Hong Kong's advocates, noting that freedom of expression is critical to prosperous and secure societies. Over the past several years, Beijing has been increasing its control over Hong Kong, arresting democracy activists, shuttering civil society groups, and forcing independent media organizations to close. The PRC has increasingly violated the fundamental freedoms of the people of Hong Kong that were guaranteed in the Basic Law and in the Sino-British Joint Declaration when control of Hong Kong was transferred from Britain to the People's Republic of China in 1997. The arrests come just days after the only Chinese Communist Party-approved candidate for the Hong Kong chief executive position, former Hong Kong security chief John Lee Kak-chew, took office. After his so-called election, the foreign ministers of the G7 countries, which include Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States, published a statement expressing grave concern over the selection process for the chief executive in Hong Kong, as part of a continued assault on political pluralism and fundamental freedoms. We continue to call on China, they declared, to act in accordance with the Sino-British Joint Declaration and its other legal obligations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.